Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hello, you two.
Isn't that just the best?
It still makes me laugh. That last, right you are, still makes me laugh. I don't know who it is, but it makes me laugh.
And we've got lots of feedback talking about Right You Are's, haven't we, this week about Mike Hatton's wonderful barnstorming quiz. But anyway, folks, this is Dum De Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that's centered on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the karate kid, that is Royfield Brown. And with me, I have the mighty allergic peanut butter cookie, that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Henry's birthday, folks, is you. This week's Dum De Dum is from Matthew Stone and his sacks now are loose. Any one of our caller-inners would like to send us in a Dum De Dum, just how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dum De Dum, leave us a plot prediction or be so gullible that you honestly believe that two 16-year-old boys are going to a mate's house on New Year's Eve for pizza and games rather than hoovering up lager like a Bavarian on a stag do, then call us on 0203 031 3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups. And for doing the Dumpty Dogs, Shambridge for her brilliant voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and to Derek for the back bedroom. We actually have a call from Derek this week. It's very exciting. Derek has started the year off right by downloading
Wait a minute. How can we have a call from a silent?
I think it's somebody pretending to be Derek, maybe.
All right. Smashing. Okay. As you were, Freeman.
Derek has started the year off right by downloading the Couch to 5K app. Unfortunately, he's put it on shuffle by mistake. So all it's taught him so far is how to sprint back to the sofa.
Yay. Well done, you. Now, on this week's
episode. Can I just apologise in advance to our dear listener? Because I am in the middle of moving house.
One?
Yes, exactly. I am in the middle of moving house, literally in the middle of it, and I'm surrounded by boxes. I just asked them to leave my mic and the laptop out, and yes, so everything is a bit chaotic, and I had to write the monologue in a Belgian cafe in Chingford today. So it's yes, forgive me in advance if I'm not quite with it, but yes, everything is. We had these packers in and they're remarkably efficient, so efficient they've packed everything, which wasn't exactly what I was expecting. But there we are. It's fine. But cut
awesome.
Me a bit of slack.
Well, listen, your best is always much better than my worst, or your worst is much better than my best. Sorry, got it the right way around. On this week's episode, we hear views from Martin, Philippa, Paul, Claire, Laurie, Mia and our Rachel. But first, before all that good stuff, settle down, folks. Brace yourself. It's our Lucy V. Freeman and our week in Ambridge. Here you go.
We began the week with the nauseating news that Tom and Theirs Lovely have had matching tattoos. Most women that go out with Tom end up wanting to stick needles in themselves, or ideally him. But it's not so surprising as the fact that that tattooists were open over the Christmas period in Capel Kerrig, which I know well and has one pub and a postbox. But anyway, the tattoos say Hilaeth, which is a Welsh word which means, as Sausage Boy explained, a longing for home. It means far more than that. It can also mean a nostalgic longing for a place or thing that never actually existed, which is basically all of Bridge Farm's rose-tinted let's all get back to the land philosophy business plans rolled into one. We were then treated via Hannah to Tom moisturising his own back. Hannah was appalled, but it could have been worse. There's Lovely could have bought him a Prince Albert. Anyway, the physical contortions required to do his own back are hideous in themselves, and I was already feeling queasy after finishing up the last of the turkey. However, I am glad to see that Tom has learned from previous mistakes and not rushed into a relationship without thinking or done anything stupid, like become immediately embedded with her family or got an indelible reminder of, oh, they haven't even been on a proper bloody date yet. She's looked at his business plan and he dug a hole. They're still at the stage where she's pretending she doesn't poo and he's still going outside to fart. It's insane. Peggy has finally stopped trying to convince Auntie Cardboard to move in with her, but only after Auntie Cardboard got a court order to say that Piggy and Hilda Ogden aren't allowed to come within 200 metres of her. After Piggy started shouting, "Come home, I don't know how to work the microwave," through the letterbox at the Laurels, as the final deterrent, Auntie Cardboard suggested that Piggy should move in there herself, which finally put the wind up her and she hurried back home, crossing herself. We had such a sad little tour of Home Farm with Jenny Darling and Piggy. "Oh, I'll miss this place so much, Mum. This is where Brian confessed he'd impregnated Siobhan. This is where he this is where he told me about banging Mandy Beesborough. This is where I caught him bending Betty Tucker over the ironing board. So many happy memories, Mum." Anyway, the Gills arrived and had a massive party. And we can tell they're not going to fit into Ambridge, as it was a proper party where people got pissed, played loud music, left things in a right state and cleared off. "This is disgraceful," throbbed Adam. "Everyone knows that when you have a party, you just have 12 very tense people around. You eat venison and you have a massive row. You don't enjoy yourself." Helen popped into the shop to buy American tan 30 denier tights as she was planning on a big one. Sadly, Lee and his big one didn't turn up and she was left with a hiccuping and bitter Roy instead. "Love, I'll tell you about love. You think everything's peachy and then poof. I know," said Helen. "One minute I was snogging Rob in the mega dairy and the next I was covered in custard and having a lesbian affair with a cockney in a woman's prison. So it wasn't all bad. Rory has decided that he doesn't want to join a magic circle firm. I think Darren Brown's probably got that market corner, to be honest. But you know, he is Brian's son, so he's probably inherited his knack for pulling things out of his trousers at unexpected moments. We got to know Tim Oatey. Tim Oatey is a friend of Ed and Shoulders. Tim seems quite nice, but if he's going to be a feature, he does need to decide where he's from and stay there. At the moment, sometimes he's Australian, sometimes from New Zealand, and sometimes the Cotswolds. "G'day, mate, me old pal, me old beauty." Anyway, along with being an all-round handyman, his job is to provide backstory for Ed Grundy, in case anyone has made a New Year's Day resolution to listen to The Archers, and we're curious to find out who this morose young man was with a deposit he can't handle and a wife who pole dances in a chicken factory. And finally, the carefully designed heartwarming moment, engineered to warm all our cockles and usher us cosily into the new year. It's been building up for ages. We all knew it was coming. The moment when an old man sobbed heartily as his overflowing Portaloo was driven off on the back of a flatbed truck. And if that isn't a good metaphor for the year we're heading into, I don't know what is. The end.
Well done, Freeman. You know what? That was better than last week, that was. No, bravo. Well done, missus. Oh, right. Now, you know what, though? You managed to go through all the shagging and skullduggery, apart from one notable affair, down at Home Farm. Jennifer and Roger, why didn't you mention that? It's not all been Brian swinging
his... Because I'd completely forgotten about it. Oh, right. Well, to be honest, all right then, it's like 6-1 to Brian, isn't it, really? when you look at it. And did that happen at Home Farm? I thought it happened... Was he coming to Home Farm to work, or was she were they meeting somewhere and
but
doing this book
to
thing?
But to Brian, I don't think he ever shagged Siobhan at Home Farm or Mandy Beesborough.
No. I always imagine Mandy Beesborough was in the back of a loose box.
Well, I always imagine her across, spread eagle across the BL board table or something.
She's nothing to do with the BL board.
Wasn't she? Yeah, no, it was Mandy Beesborough again.
Mandy Beesborough was, she's one of the hunting lot, one of the horsey lot.
A horsey be great.
You're
right.
Thinking of the solicitor who he tried to...
Yes, I am.
Yeah, who he never got very far with, did he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was the last time he
Annabelle
tried to...
Shrivener.
There you go. Well, look at you.
I'm turning into Cosmo.
You have this kind of... Well, listen, there's many, many worse things you could be than a Cosmo. Congratulations, by the way, on your book.
Pardon?
You've got a book out, haven't you?
No.
Well, what was this picture I saw on the sofa?
Oh, no. That's the... for anyone that bought or had bought for them, more like the Archers, BBC The Archers calendar this year, I wrote it. So the things in it... was me. So I had to pretend to be Jazza writing about pigs, Bert Fry giving his gardening tips and various things like that. And so Robert got a picture of it and sent me a picture of him saying, look at me with my new calendar. Look what I got, because he'd house sat for somebody or cat sat or something like that. And they gave him that as a present. And I said, look on the back. And he read on the back that it said, with thanks to blah, 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 Lucy Freeman.
You know what? I need to go back to the opticians, back to Specsavers to get a better pair of glasses, because I thought it was a book he was holding.
Ah.
Yeah. Anyway, congratulations. Well done, you.
Thank you very much.
Right. Last week in Ambridge.
My favourite bit. It's already won 2019 for me, to be honest. And it was January the 7th it happened. No, 6th or something. was Tracy and Jimus. I loved that. Tracy in the thing ordering our fags, and they said, have you got any spinach? And Susan went, spinach? And he went, not really. I just loved, she's my spirit animal. If I didn't have cigarettes, I'd kill them both.
Well, Kerry did say on the Twitters, didn't he, that he just adores writing her. And it's what we say about so many characters on the Archers, that she's kind of criminally underserved. And my if I take one thing away from last week, was there were lots of, in effect, kind of odds and sods characters who just seemed to have like one little line and that was it. Because when was the last time we heard from her? When?
Oh, you know, yonks ago. Absolutely yonks. It was that Roy storyline, wasn't it, when she was going after Roy? And he had to pretend to be boring. Ha ha ha. That was a tough gig.
Exactly. But like, we had Auntie Chris, we had, you know, also, I'm just jumping around here. Molly Button.
Yeah.
Thinking about it, right, you've got Ben and Rory. They really would be knocking about with our Molly, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But it's like Molly Button, even the silence had kind of been forgotten, but even she got dredged up again this week.
Yeah.
You know, it's a case of there's a whole load of, I don't know whether it's a case of, I think the BBC kind of accounting year for being able to bring on the silence and bit part characters obviously starts on January the 1st, and he's like, let's throw them all in.
But that's what Christmas is, isn't it? It's like when you get a Christmas card and you think, who the hell are Sarah and Dave? Oh, Sarah and Dave! You know? So the answers was like that. Just lots of people. Because when they said party at Molly's, I was thinking, hooray, who? Who's Molly? Oh, Molly Button. Because I'm in my head, she's still, you know, eight. And now I've realized now that she's their sort of contemporaries. But yeah, it is the season of unexpected people popping up. And that's what happened on the Archers too.
By the way, you've just reminded me, I got, guess how many Christmas cards I got this year? And this is not to feel sorry for me, but guess how many I got?
14.
One, right? I got one this year. And
how many
fine.
Did you send?
There you go, right? And also, I'm an international
None?
Hobo. No, I didn't send any. So yeah. I'm an international hobo.
You're
so
lucky to get
I don't
one
expect...
then, I would say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, it was from Peter, a dum-de-dum listener. And he just said, thank you for all the, you know, thank you for the last, you know, on dum-de-dum. I was like, how the hell have you got my address? And I realised...
Even your parents don't know your address.
Well, there you go. So it came to my mum and dad's house, and it took me all of 5 minutes to realise. I was like, this is kind of spooky, Peter. Right. But no, it's on the newsletters that we send out. Because of GDPR, you have to have a physical address.
Oh.
Yeah. So thank you for my one Christmas card. It went up with my mum and dad's like 58,000, but I had one. So thank you, Peter, for sending me that Christmas card. So I'm not so spooched now, but it's very sweet of you, sir. Oh. Right. Now, so you've dealt with kind of Peggy and Auntie Chris, haven't you? We dealt with that.
Yes. I did think it was funny, though, the way Peggy reared back in alarm when Auntie Chris said, why don't you live with me here? And she went, here? As if, you know, as if she'd said, why don't you live under that pile of dog poo? You know?
You're just measuring yourself up for a coffin if you move into the Laurels, aren't you? And that's Peggy's
pretty
vibe.
Much.
She's like,
yep.
Not doing that. And I did think it was nice to have a quick recap of Jenny and Brian's marriage. You know, the whole reminiscence about...
The whole shit show.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't all been, but yeah, she went through all the dark bits, didn't she?
She did, really, yes.
And it was nice for her, actually, to talk about Rory, because she does kind of in passing, but to acknowledge that, you know, she wouldn't have had it any other way kind of in the end, and that, you know, and she does have, you know, great affection for him. I thought that was somewhat touching. Now, do you believe this bollocks, you can see where I stand on this, about this bracelet, you know, would Pat have, exactly.
No.
Mm. And I don't believe that Tom would have recognised it either. He's too full of himself. How, that? Why would he even remember?
Yeah, no.
Mm.
Yep, no, that's a load of pants. And the matching tattoo thing is just fucking nauseating, quite honestly. All that giggling. Oh, God, the giggling. They're 37.
Oh, but come on, Liz. Have you never been in love?
Yes, I have, but I haven't been a complete arse about it.
Oh, come on now. In hindsight, if you're not going to look back and go, oh, God.
I am not a giggler. I cannot do that giggling thing. I just can't. And the, oh, God, no. Mm. Better watch your back till the... Oh! Make me go all itchy. Ugh. She's got this really weird, I like her, but she's got this really weird arch way of speaking. She tries to make everything, she makes everything sound as if it's extremely significant when it isn't. It's a bit like Adam. I haven't got time, you know. So she says.
Oh, no, she's not as bad as that. Loose.
No, she's not as bad as
that.
But when he said something like, oh, I shall miss you, and she said, and I will miss you. something like, yeah, it's just really weird the way she's, it's like she's practicing, it's like she's rehearsing for talking to someone. Like she's tried every answer out three ways before she decided which way she was going to say it. I don't know. I don't mean she's a bad actress. It's the character. It's not the acting. But
maybe she's trying out for next year's Panto. In Ambridge, you know, she's over enunciate and whatever. I tell you what, I am loving though. I actually really love Ben and Rory, and
Ben is funny. He's funny.
But we've considering
no archers are funny. None of them, are they?
None of the Brookie lot, you mean?
No. Kenton occasionally gets somewhere near it. The rest of them, hopeless. Not a shred of comic timing between them. And when he said it's an establishment that caters for the keen underage drinker, I actually laughed and I thought, that is the first time a member of the actual Archer family has made me laugh out loud.
No, considering in effect their new characters, yes, we know that they've been on it in air quotes for 16 years, but they've been silent. Yeah. We've got so much from them so fast, haven't we?
Yeah.
You know, that
yeah.
normally what you get is a new character wanders on and it takes you some time to work out, am I supposed to like them? Am I not? Yeah. Are they funny? Are they this? What's their motivation? Da, da, da. These pair, right, I actually believe they're mates. Rory is written, you know, he's got this kind of 3D background, is a bit of a scamp, is a bit of a bullshitter, is a bit of a charmer, is a bit of a kind of everything. Ben, you know, is actually, you know, the good one out of the pair and stuff. And, you know, his whole thing with Bess, you know, his relationship with David and with his other sibling, specifically Josh. And we've just got that all in what? 3 weeks, 4 weeks since we actually heard them for the first time.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. And love the fact that it's kind of reminding me back to the 80s when, no, not the 80s. It would have been like the mid 90s when it was Roy and Will, etc., were friends. And it was, you know, getting up to teenage stuff, you know, wanting to drink and whatever and you know sidling around and stuff. So I love all of that. Loved all of that. Right, now I've got some other notes here loose.
Okay.
But they're gonna go on forever. And we've got a ton load of calls. So why don't we listen to some caller interest?
Okay.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First up, it's a second-time caller in a row.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. This is Laurie, a second-time caller in a row, doing something which I never thought I would spend any of my finite time on this planet doing, which is calling to defend two characters in The Archers. First, Jenny Darling. Now, I agree with Lucy that I found it very unpalatable when Jennifer was laughing at the size of her new house, but... I do think that the strength that the woman has shown to accept this change in lifestyle, I do think that, God bless her, if she doesn't have the right to have a bit of a whinge to her husband, whose idiocy is the one that caused this mess in the first place, then, you know, she would have to be a saint not to. And then the other person that I just want to speak up for is for Josh, because, yes, he is a bit of a smug arsehole, but he's been brought up by unbelievable smug arseholes, and at least he directs his arseholiness to people who kind of deserve it. He winds the ushers up, and for that, I salute him. And yes, it was unfortunate that Lily was caught in the crossfire of his harassment of Russ. Everyone else is pussyfooting around Lily, and the last thing that she wants is for people to treat her as if she's being naive, which of course she is. To poke fun at her, actually in the long run, she probably will thank him for when the wool falls from her eyes. Bye. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye, Laurie.
He speaketh sense, this Laurie, I think.
Yes, wise words indeed.
I did feel sorry for Jenny Darling when she couldn't. She had a little fit of weeping in the kitchen because she put her food mixer out on the top and it took up half the worktop, and then she couldn't put anything anywhere else. And then when isn't it quite cruel that they've picked the actor to play Rory who can't say his R's? I mean, they could have called him Gregory, which would have been worse slightly, but, you know. Anyway, with Rory going, what is it, Jenny? Oh, don't cry. What is it? I could put it all back again. And then there's lots of pot clanging in the background. Yes, I did feel sympathy with her then, but partly because Brian has been, well, like I said last week, he doesn't do anything concrete to help. Like, let me help you. What do you want me to do? Let me pack that box for you. Let me da 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 da. All he does is piss around taking over Adam's eco office, whatever it is, which is like an upturned beehive, and book expensive lunches. That's it. Nothing practical at all.
But you know what, though? I think our Brian, I know we're not really supposed to talk about this week, but I will, just in this one regard, just to say that Brian does know his own deficiencies, but he does acknowledge them because he does put on a little bit of a spread for our Jenny, doesn't he? Which kind of acknowledges the fact that what she's had to go through, and actually the fact that there's a bit of a chocolate spoon when it comes to practicalities, and the fact that he's ballsed everything up, and that's the reason why they're in reduced circumstances. So it's not as if he's not unknowing about his own deficiencies, and he does recognize, and he does recognize what a wonderful wife he actually has.
It's not a deficiency, it's laziness. He doesn't want to help her pack boxes. He wants to fart around.
Who packed your boxes?
The packers.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what Jenny and Brian would have done in real life. If I can have packers, Jenny darling can certainly have packers. No,
exactly. Especially if you can afford to have a big, well.
She's 70 years old, for crying out loud. It's just nuts.
But again, what I would say about that scene was we needed an exploration of her and Rory. Their relationship, and
there was genuine
that.
Affection there, wasn't there? He was worried about her, being unhappy and everything.
Though I must admit, I thought it a little bit odd that he calls her Jennifer. Wouldn't he just call her Mum, considering he doesn't know his mother?
Yeah. Yes, I know. I thought that, but it's like Debbie. When she's cross with Brian, he's Brian, and when she's pleased with him, he's Dad.
Yeah, but that makes much more sense because she can remember a time when there wasn't a Brian. Or no, actually, even that's not true, because Brian and Jenny, the character of Brian came into this in the early 70s, and Debbie's approximately my age because Adam is a year or two older than me.
Yeah.
So Debbie wouldn't have known her biological father. Or wouldn't have known anyway.
No.
But I've always thought that was actually really clever and very natural, the way that she flits between the two.
Yeah.
But there is, Rory surely would just be calling her Mum.
But maybe the circumstances surrounding that, it would be too much for Jenny to be called Mum. She wouldn't want to be called Mum because of the fact that it was an affair.
But that seemed, whilst if it hadn't been for the fact that actually what Jenny said to Peggy when they're reminiscing, I would have actually gone along with that. I must admit, the first time that Maisha called me Dad, it was really jarring, and it was jarring for about 6 months. But I was 6 when I came into her life.
And you were 6.
Sorry, she was 6. Sorry. She was 6. And she was, I was definitely with her for 2 years. And I was always Royfield, Royfield, Royfield. And one day she came home and said, Dad. I was like, huh? And that took a lot of getting used to.
Yeah.
It took me months and stuff. So you could well be right about the whole kind of Jennifer thing, but
but when she was talking to Piggy about it, she didn't say, I love him. She said, I wouldn't have had it any other way. She said something like, I'm so fond of him, or I don't know, but there's a slight reserve there. Very slight, but there is a slight edge
but if
that
you
there isn't with her
have
real
it
children.
Any other way, isn't she saying that she loves him?
But she didn't say she loves him.
Yeah, but isn't that saying that, considering how terrible it must have been for her, you know, because this is not an affair which you could brush underneath the carpet.
No.
Because the evidence of it is there, you know. But she has a... But you could well be right. You could well be right. Because I'm always, the glass is half full, and I'm always, you know, look on the bright side of
this.
I'm
always bitter and nasty.
Yeah. Kinda. Anyway, let's go and see what our Rachel has to say about things.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. This is Rachel Ease Thomas here. Great big show off on the Twitters. I was phoning saying, where was the second part of the Canterbury Tales gone? I've been looking for it for about the past week. Just before I phoned, it appeared on my podcast feed. So that's moan one sorted. Thank you. Moan two, which will probably start again after listening to the Canterbury Tales, is, why does Ruth keep referring to it as David's barn? I know Linda wrote the script, but surely it would have been modified to be David and Ruth's barn or David and my barn. I know she's playing Chaucer, but yeah, I dislike the fact they're not referring to her at all in the ownership of the barn, which is an important thing. On the mince pie issue, the educational storyline to stop your dogs eating mince pies really didn't work. I'm a vet. I was working Christmas Day. On Christmas Day, myself and my colleague saw 4 dogs who'd eaten mince pies, 9 dogs who'd eaten chocolate, and a dog who'd eaten a grape, as well as speaking to a bunch of other people whose dogs had eaten stupid things. So, motto of the story, don't let your dogs eat stupid things. I'm about to go off to Italy for 3 months to study Italian and ski, and the Archers is going to be one of my main contacts with the UK, along with Dumpty Dum. So keep it up, guys. And if you want to see what I'm up to, I'm on Vet Voyages on Twitter and on Medium, and I'll be blogging about what I'm doing. So love to you all. Happy New Year. Talk to you soon.
Hey, hey.
I am very jealous.
Me too. Now, Arloose. Have you, what did you reckon? Because I'll just fess up. I didn't listen to, I was going to say to any of it at all, but I did by accident catch about a minute and a half of the Canterbury Tales.
Actually, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I'm not saying, I don't know. So you think let's keep the panto going as an Archer's thing? Or
I never said that. Easy.
All right. Tell us why it was good.
I think they just presented it in a very entertaining way. And it can be really worthy, that stuff, and really kind of scholarly, because it's just a big show off. Look, I can understand, you know, I understand this language and I understand, you understand the nuances. And I could just imagine that's how Linda would have, Linda in real life would have done it. She'd have had them all pronouncing everything in peculiar ways and everything to make it completely incomprehensible to everybody else. But actually, it was very good. That was just really bawdy and funny and sort of slapsticky. And yeah, it was good. Very good. Mm. But yes, I noticed that as well. David's barn.
I don't know. I can't comment because I didn't. All I heard on the whole Canterbury Tales thingy, and I must admit I did switch it off, and I think I actually heard it in real time because that's the only reason why I could switch it off, was the bit about the buttocks and the couple that were having it away, and then there was some bloke that really fancied her, and there was that bit. I heard that bit and I thought, you know what, this is not for the likes of me. Let me switch it over onto 5 Live and let's hear some footy. So that's what I did. But you reckon it was good though?
I thought so, yeah, and I think a lot of other people seem to quite like it.
No, I've heard nothing but positive things about it, but I'll never know with my own ears because not for me. Right, now, tell you somebody who I do actually kind of quite like, Samir, and she's from Newcastle.
Hello, Royfield, Lucy, and all Dumpty Dum peeps worldwide. This Hello. Is Mia in Newcastle wishing you all a very happy new year. I just wanted to call to make a comment about the Canterbury Tales. I'm not concerned about the setup of Linda Snell doing it and the characters who are in the Archers, whether they would have really done the show, had time to learn the lines, and of course, who was left to be in the audience. I just didn't care about the way that some of the Chaucer characters were played by the sort of farm characters from The Archers. I just wasn't worried about that. I just loved the fact that the actors themselves were able to really shine through this production. Particularly someone like Ed Grundy, the guy who plays Ed in The Knight's Tale, thought it was fantastic. Now, Ed himself wouldn't have been able to do that, clearly, but really loved it. It just, the whole piece allowed the actors to really shine with their vocal abilities, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I also loved Emerald O'Hanrahan, who plays Emma. She was really able to stretch herself in The Knight's Tale, which I thought was the best narrated, best tale narrated by Annabelle Dow, who plays Kirsty.
Yeah.
In fact, all the tales were really well done, and I was very engaged, and I also loved the way it was broadcast, like a real radio play, and that the narration only took us back to David's barn towards the end of their particular tale. I thought it was excellent. So well done to all the actors involved, the dramatist, director and producer, and thank you very much, and a happy new year to everybody. Bye.
Bye, and to you.
She seems to agree with you that it was awesome too.
Annabelle Dowler, who plays Kirsty, is just such a good actress, and she is on so. I was listening to her over Christmas. I have a DAB radio, and I can record things onto the radio. So I sort of got my, as I was doing my cooking and stuff, I had all my things lined up to listen to. And there were lots and lots of dramas and lots of sort of vintage dramas. And I was thinking, oh, there's Kirsty. Oh, there she is again. Oh, and she's in this one. She was just in everything. She's just an incredibly good actress.
I did put out a little compendium show round about New Year's Eve with bits and pieces of the interviews, which I did last year. And the one thing which I took away from talking to her and then listening to her other work outside of The Archers is she's very obviously she's a very good actor. She's a very good voice actor, but also she has a great range of voices as well. And I can imagine that she's been on many a thing and we've not even realised it was actually her. You know, unless you've necessarily got your Annabelle Dowler ear on, you're going to miss it.
Well, it's like Rachel Atkins, who plays Vicky Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
She's in so much stuff. And sometimes, I mean, I'm sort of mates with her. And sometimes it won't be until the credits go. And then it says Rachel Atkins. And I think, blimey. And I have to listen again to see if they're just like chameleons. It's incredible.
So one actor, one character who I've never really bought the fact that they're always in the Christmas play is Eddie.
Eddie Grundy or Ed Grundy?
Eddie.
You know, but he loves performing. You can't keep him off the stage.
Well, he's a bit of a showman in that regard.
Yeah.
But the fact that he always nails it every year, and he isn't somebody who is supposed to be well-read or anything like that. You know, he's supposed to be this lowly, farmhand, so to speak, that you wouldn't have thought that somebody like him would actually nail it every year. And
you'd be thinking, well, he wasn't in Blind Spirit or anything, was he?
But he's perennially in it though, isn't it? And does a good turn. And it's kind of just made me think about the actor who we never really talk about, the actor behind Eddie, Trevor Harrison, and the fact that he obviously enjoys this and must be, I'm presuming now, somebody who does a whole load of rep and stuff. And whenever I listen to BBC plays and stuff, I don't often seem to hear him, but I don't know. I could be wrong.
I've heard him in a few things, but I know that he used, because when they used to do the road shows, when the Archers would go to country fairs and stuff, the Archers cast, it was always Trevor Harrison that would go. And he does genuinely love singing and talking to the crowd. And, you know, he is a showman. And he said, actually, in the episode, didn't he? We said, are you nervous, Eddie? And he said, no, I'm a natural performer. I don't, you know, and I think that was true. I think that was him, the character, and him, the actor, talking.
All right. Let's have another one. It's our Paul.
Hello, it's Paul Room here again. I just wanted to say, and I honestly do have more than one topic of conversation, but Mike Hatton's Right You Are, Hello You Two quiz was absolutely hilarious and should have come with a health warning at the start of it, because when it was playing, I had a coughing, laughing, choking fit. It was so funny. I think it was the synthesized voice, the music over the top, and just the whole thing. Absolutely brilliant. But yeah, what I'm phoning is... just a confession, really, that I don't actually listen to Radio 4, just listen to the downloads of The Archers, because my favourite radio station is Talk Sport, because they just nat on about football the whole time. And over the New Year period, I called one of the really funny journalists, Max Rushton, puts together a segment called The Sturmey Archers on a Sunday, which is a takeoff of The Archers. You may gather an everyday story of cycling folk, but it's just has various sports stars and football journalists in it. It has the Archers theme tune, and it's just a very strange little drama. Even have Sir Bradley Wiggins in it. And seen he's been in The Archers as well. But anyway, why I phoned him, because I was listening to The Sturmey Archers on Talk Sports and couldn't believe it when there was a Right You Are even in this takeoff of it, almost killed over. So, yeah, must be sort of some sort of epidemic. But yeah, keep it up. Bye.
Bye. See, I quite fancied Paul Room. I quite fancied Paul Room until I found out that he listened to Talk Sport, and now I've gone right off him.
I must admit, Talk Sport is a little bit too beneath stairs, even for me. You know, and I can't do that. And to be honest with you, when I said I listened to Radio 5 Live, I don't really too much either, you know. But yes, so moving swiftly on. But though, Paul's a big fat fibber, because he said he doesn't only have one topic of conversation, then proceeded just to talk about the thing he only ever talks about, which is Right You Are's. He must be fun at dinner parties, Paul Room, mustn't he? Poor Mrs. Room. I've met her. She's lovely, but long suffering woman. Paul, you are a bore. You know, he is. I love him dearly. Brother from another mother and all of that. You know, the failed vet that had to become a doctor and all of that. But like, moving swiftly on. Now this is my new mucker for 2019. It's our Claire from Clapham.
Hey, Dumpty Dum, it's Claire from Clapham here. Firstly, I wanted to say that when I saw Lucy's tweet about getting emotional on last week's episode, I thought maybe she'd been overcome with distress at the idea of Jenny finally leaving Home Farm, which, you know, is kind of emotional thing.
Fumes,
but actually, you're emotional about Dumpty Dum, which makes a lot more sense because, well, it's just brilliant and we're all lovely and we love you. And it's great to have lots of new caller innovators recently. So welcome to the fold. I'm ringing in with two plot predictions. The first is that Joe recently said that he was thinking much more about Nick recently. Mm. And my instinct is that this is him reaching the end of his mortal coil. He's nearing the edge of whatever it is. Don't step into the light. And he's thinking of Nick, and he will soon be joined with Nick in the afterlife of whatever description. And possibly
buried in the portal,
dying peacefully on his personal toilet on the night that Clary and Eddie have dinner at Grey Gables. Secondly, after much expectation, Helen and Leah finally got it together, which I was... that we've all predicted. But my prediction on this is that Peggy will die and everyone will wish that she had moved into some sort of assisted flat at the Laurels with Chris, if only she'd done it when Chris had asked. But anyway, the upshot of that is that Helen will inherit the lodge and she and Lee will move in, or Lee, in the meantime, will have some freak karate accident rendering him severely limited in mobility or something, and then the obvious choice will be to move in with Helen at the lodge because they've already got all of the grab rails and stairlifts or whatever it is that they've put in. And therefore, all of those adaptations will have been worth it. So that's my second prediction. Anyway, keep up the good work. Speak to you soon. Bye.
I don't know if she's serious or not. A freak karate accident that renders you requiring handrails. I love the idea of Joe dying like Elvis on the lav.
Yeah, a lot of people go that way, don't they?
They do.
Mm,
heart failure.
Yes. And it would be somewhat of a neat way of putting Lee with our Helen. You know,
yes, it would.
There, it'd be very clever, very clever. Right now, I would shunt her on about that, but we got our Philippa who wants to get in on the action as well. Our Luce.
Hello, you fabulous people. This is Philippa, a first time caller in era. I believe, looking at the list, I'm a Josh Archer, so that would mean I'd be calling Russ Mr. Jones over the Brussels sprouts on Christmas Day. What fun. I've got a request and a plot prediction.
Right.
Firstly, ooh, I would like to ask, please, that a team of counsellors arrive at Ambridge. Both psychologists, I think, for Helen, Henry, Elizabeth, the list goes on, and also a team of business counsellors. Brookfield, Bridge Farm, Grange Farm, the lot of them. I think you could make quite a bit of money as a councillor there. Anyway, my quick plot prediction is I'm wondering if Rob's parents have bought Home Farm. Sorry if anyone else has come up with that as well. But that's just what I was wondering. And longer term, I was thinking that perhaps Lily will come back, do more and more at Lower Loxley, taking it over, and then after Freddie comes out of prison, Elizabeth will die. Sorry, Elizabeth. And Lower Loxley will, of course, pass on to Freddie, ignoring all Lily's hard work. Perhaps her brother-sister feud for life. Anyway, enough of my ramblings. Keep being brilliant. Take care. Bye.
Bye. People have suggested that Ursula and Bruce may have bought Home Farm, but they certainly wouldn't have had that party.
No.
Unless they'd rented out the house on Airbnb, possibly, then that sort of makes more sense. But I don't think they've got that much money, Ursula and Bruce.
Me either. And why would they come back to Ambridge? That would
to
make
be near Giddy Jack.
Oh, God, yeah. I need to think before I open my mouth, Lucy.
Roy, if you've been doing this for 50 years, you don't need to change now. And I completely agree with you, Philippa, about the Lower Loxley thing. I'm not sure about Elizabeth dying, retiring, maybe. But yes, I think the progenitor thing of it automatically going to
Freddie
is going to cause some stink. And quite bloody rightly, because he couldn't organise a piss up in a brewery or a drug bust in a young offenders unit. And Lily is going to be doing all the hard work and everything. And then it's just, no, you've got a penis, so you have it. You know, it's just absolutely what, insane. So
whilst I agree with you, that's a wrong analogy, because Freddie's a DJ, so he could organise a piss up in a brewery because he can get a party started. And he's a drug dealer. True. So, So Freddie actually could organise that. He could go down really quite well. However, I fundamentally agree with your wider point, though, Freeman, that he's a useless Burke, you know. But no, I think that'd be a great setup for the future of Lower Loxley, that you have these feuding siblings and the fact that one of them actually does know what she's doing and understands the business, and you're the one just inherited.
Yeah.
God, I kind of put my teeth in.
Inherit it.
There you go. Thank you, Freeman. Right, that would be rather delicious. Go on.
This next one is Martin Greaves, who many of you will have met at various events and things. Mm. And he is
a knob twiddler.
He's a knob. He does. He twiddles his knob to great effect. Mm-hmm. But this, you would not believe how difficult it was for him to record this, and you will see why. He said he was texting me as he was doing it. He said he was nearly in tears at one stage, tears of frustration. So if Royfield plays it now, you will understand why he was getting so annoyed.
It's Derek here, aka Greavesy E17, aka Martin. There I was listening to last week's show, and the bit with Mike Hatton's brilliant "Hello, you two," and "Right you are" quiz when this happened.
I don't know anyone that says it, apart from in Ambridge.
Right, OK. Hey, Siri.
I'm listening.
Right, OK. Hey, Siri.
Yes.
Right, OK. Hey, Siri.
Go ahead.
Right, OK. Hey, Siri.
I'm listening.
Right, OK.
I got very confused. Obviously, my first thought was, has Royfield fucked up the editing again? Then eventually I worked out what was going on.
Cheeky
the show was
leader.
Playing from my phone to a Bluetooth speaker nearby. And when Robart said, "Hey, Siri," the Siri on my phone picked up. This paused the podcast, so nothing happened. And Siri gave up. The next thing that happened was my app skipped back 10 seconds. And so Robart said, "Hey, Siri," again. And my phone responded, "Again," and waited again. This happened a lot of times, and I got very confused. Obviously, it doesn't take much. Eventually, I worked it all out. Did this happen to anybody else?
Well, you're a cheeky bleeder, Mr. Greaves. Royfield's messed up the editing again. Though, that didn't happen to me. Because my mum and dad's house, where I was at over Christmas, they have Alexa. But
yeah,
when I heard this recording from our Derek, my Siri then started to transcribe everything that he said. It did switch on my Siri, and then it was transcribing it really quite accurately. So it set my phone off as well because I was playing it through my computer. So yes. There needs to be some kind of warning whenever we can get clever and say things like Siri or Alexa.
I just loved Martin was so baffled. It took him ages to figure out what the hell was going on. He was trapped in some sort of temporal loop where he couldn't listen any further. Being unable to get any further into the podcast because of Siri. Poor Martin. And he's technical as well. Imagine if that had happened to me. I'd have just burst into tears.
Right, I feel like I'm rushing things along, and I don't like to do that. But we do like to try and keep this round about the 1 hour mark, don't we?
Yeah.
Right. So let's come back the other side with a little touch of our Millie Bell.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Good day, everyone. We started our week by talking about Lily and Russ. So Lily was going to go and work and study, and Russ will keep the place nice. And we wondered whether that was a really equal contribution. Katie Turner said, Lily is showing the personality of someone who has been a grown-up far too early in their development. Now she has been taken out of her safe space, small village where she was a bright star, and has to make friends and a life independent of her family connections, and her confidence has been knocked. I think this is why she is clinging to Russ more and more, even as her decision appears unwise. Russ, if he is as awful as we suspect he is, could take advantage of this, but I'm hoping his behaviour is more a sign of being a hopeless man-child rather than a master manipulator. I think you're being very positive there, Katie. I think he's a master manipulator, but that's only my opinion. Karen Valerie Hodgson said, the script writers have changed her character yet again. The real Lily has more backbone, more self-worth, and would have done what she knows is best by now. That is, ditch the parasite boyfriend and her unicorns and stay at Lower Loxley, where, as Elizabeth prophetically said recently, she can pretty much run the place single-handed. Come on, scriptwriters, you can do better than that. And I don't know, I'm playing Pollyanna here, but I do wonder whether when you're in love, you are the same person you are when you are not in love, certainly in the early days, and whether she just adores him and... that's, you know, that's how she sits at the moment. And Sawyer and Jordan said, just listening to it again, live this time in Toronto, and Russ sounds even worse the second time round. I just can't see what's keeping you here. Well, then, you don't really know Lily, do you? Despite trying to convince her how much you love her, you sad excuse of a man. And there was a lot more in that vein. He's not universally loved by our listener anyways. I got put onto a link for a new podcast, which is called Dogs in the City, and it features, one of the episodes features our very own Alison Dowling, who plays Lizzie. So there's a link on the Facebook page if you... I haven't heard it yet, but I have downloaded it, ready to go. So, yep, looking forward to that. We talked about tattoos. They are so 2018. And we wondered whether Hannah could be jealous. Christine Coulson said, I think she's quickly moving away from jealousy. For all she started to fall for him, she's very much a strong-minded lady. Her seriously are you moving so fast with someone you will get tattoos approach, I think, is believable, and more of a lack of respect for who she thought he was as a person. I don't like her, but annoyingly, I think I empathise with her a bit too much. Catherine Chevalier said, now they've got matching tattoos, it's definitely doomed. Janice Betson said, much as I don't like Hannah, I detest Natasha, and I share Hannah's opinion on the tattoos. I guess my thing was just, I don't think it's any of your business anymore, Hannah, and you need to not have an opinion because it's got nothing to do with you. But I guess that would depend on how close friends they were, but they haven't been friends for very long, have they? And Jane Minefield Brush said, how does he know if his tat says what she says? It could say twat in Welsh. Oh, dear. Awesome, awesome, awesome. We also... talked about what happened with when Lily changed her mind about going, and we said Russ is not going to be happy about this. Janice Betson said, Lily is obviously itching to take over Lower Loxley and make it one of the most successful stately home type businesses in the country. She could probably do a degree part time. Nice thinking, Janice. Somewhere more local and run Lower Loxley at the same time. Russ can have a shepherd's hut in the grounds and live and paint in it. Cheaper than keeping him in a flat in Manchester. There was lots more in that vein. We had a good fun with that one. Royfield Brown very kindly put up for us the Right You Are and Hello You Too quiz that was done by Mike. And Mike, we love you, we love you, we love you, we do. And it was so much fun. I played it about three times because I didn't get them all the first time. And I had a bit of fun. I played it with my mother-in-law, who's 82 and was slower at listening to them, but she knows the artist better than me. So, yep, we had a bit of fun with that. And that's all from us for now. I'm off to Greece first thing in the morning, and I'm going to leave you in the very capable of hands of Yokel Bear this week. And I would like to confirm what my fabulous team, I just feel like I'm in this gorgeous family kind of team with Yokel Bear and with Witherspoon, and we can just work together and decide who can do what when, and everyone's so accommodating, and we love our interactions with you. We comment on together on this often. We think you're fantastic too, so I hope you all have a wonderful 2019. So from the social media team to you, I say hooroo.
Thank you for that, Millie. Thank you. Can you hit us with some tweets, madam?
I can. Pie and a pint. Blimey, if Jenny's going to stop in every room where Brian confessed to adultery, this is going to be a very long morning. Morrissey girl. My favourite old Tom was the one we didn't hear from in Canada. TJ said very accurately, Adam always sounds like he's lying down drinking a pina colada. I like the specificness of that one. Nazilla said, Peggy was the special guest for Canterbury Tales. Special advisory role, as she was the only one to have actually been there as Chaucer was writing them. And Tony Harvey 8 said, ooh, Lee, better find out what happened to Helen's ex. If she won't say, ask if it's okay for you to take a stab at it.
Very good, very good. I should have said this, Luce, earlier on in the show. But it's news about the BBC Archers Tour, which is on February the 16th at 3 p.m. in Brum. Now, if you go on to dumdum.com, folks, you can go and register for the tour. There's only 15 places, and we have had a few takers already. What I'm going to do, so go to dumdum.com and it's on the homepage there. If you can go. Now, there are only 15 places and it is a pilot, and they're running this specifically for dumdummers because they want to test out the tour. What I'm going to do though is I'm going to submit them 20 names, because invariably some people will drop out, so you'll be like first reserve. But literally, I think, you know, doing quick maths on the top of my head, I think we've had about 10 tickets taken already. So only, and it is free now, so only say that you can go, want to go, if you know you're absolutely going to turn up, because I know there's going to be many people. You know, if we had 40 paying people to go to it last time, the fact that this is now free, please only go onto the site and subscribe if you absolutely can show up. But I'm going to give them 20 names, and it's between you and the Beeb. They'll contact you and get you in and do all of that stuff. Now, Lucy, I think we should thank people who've been writing us reviews recently, because it's something which we used to do back in the day. And for people that don't know, if you write us a review on iTunes, it's awesome, because it means that we helps us to get top of those iTunes, Apple Podcast charts. And it's a way of us to get more and new listeners. So, Arluce, if you'd like to thank the following.
Oh, my goodness, there's a lot of them. The reviews are from Chief Red Wine, Blue Machiavelli, P. Johns, Potter Abroad 73, Munster Sale Girl, Text Pistol 89, I'm Not Listening, Red Agnes, Bingley Baggy, Cobert, Pub Fan, and Take That, Take Me.
Yeah, so thank you for your reviews. And whenever we do thank people for reviews, I do say this, but it needs to be repeated, that you don't need to have an Apple device to write an Apple iTunes review. You can just go onto the website and just go sign up. If you use another podcatching service, go and write us a review on that. And then maybe send us an email in and tell us, because I don't look at any others other than iTunes, because that is the most important. But maybe if you use Google Play or whatever it is and you've written a review, then just send me an email. And then in a future show, we will thank you. Another way of supporting us is Patreon. And we have had a lot of new Patreons in the last 3-4 months. Now, in the last year, but what I have done is just taken a list from the last 3 or 4 months, and our Luce is going to thank you now.
Okay, Jenny Newman, Emily Crow, Gretchen Anthony, Helen Sharp, Joe Crouchman, Joanne Hudson, Julie Harvey, Paul Schleuser, Rona Humphreys, Sarah Houghton, Anne John, Elizabeth Jones, Liz Smythe, Alex Caldra, Ian Streeter, Morris Snell, Nicola Headlam, Sue Lee, Susie Sullivan, Kat Sanford, Pak Chow, Caroline McKendrick, Kirsten Foster, Tindara Sidoti McNary, Joshua, Laura Cook, Neil Gagan and Valerie Bayliss.
So thank you, new Patreon supporters. And of course, Patreon is a way which you can give us $2 per show to get the extra content when we do it. And yes, we're still trying to sort out the Charles Collingwood interview, and it will be epic when it actually gets delivered into your podcatchers, folks. Now, we would also like to thank the following for their exemplary support, i.e. you supported us from the very beginning of Patreon. And I'll just quickly read these out. So Barbara Wiseman, Morgan Johnson, Scott Matthewman, Andy Bent, Jan Mitchell, Jean Rose and Jennifer Reba. Now, could you please email me your postal addresses? And it's just royfield@gmail.com, because I'm going to send you a little something in the post just to thank you for your support for the last, I think, 3 years we've been in Patreon.
Remember to get in contact. You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe or on the website, or you can call 0203 031 3105 to leave us a message.
Mm-hmm. And on Twitter, you can find us where we are at DumDeeDum. Lucy is at
Lucy V. Freeman.
And I can be found quite simply at Royfield, which is R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D. And of course, then there is R. Robart, who is at Naked Fingers. And then R. Kerry, who will be joining us very soon, who's at Kerry Warbis on the Twitters. On Facebook, there is DumDeeDum has a very kind of special place there, and you can simply go onto Facebook and just type in DumDeeDum and then join us there. And as a way of thanking all those people on Facebook, here is our Millie Bell, who is reading out some of the wonderful reviews that you've left for us on that self same social media platform.
Good day, everyone. This is not our usual roundup. I just thought I'd take a moment to read out some of the reviews we've been getting on our Facebook page. People recommending DumDeeDum, which is just awesome. Maisie Jett recommends it for Lucy's wit and wisdom and the week in Ambridge. Rob Williams says, I particularly like the recap for the previous week. Pant-wettingly funny. Mark Quince says, Lucy's weekly roundup is so funny. And Sue Scott says, brings me joy, sweaty, I think that's supposed to be sweary, or maybe it is sweaty, irreverent and ever so funny. Mia Fox says, good crack and a great community. Catherine Shorrock says, I wish I'd discovered this podcast earlier, but I'm having a lot of fun catching up on all the old episodes. I listen at work and it's a jolly good thing that I work on my own, as it means that no one else can see me snorting with laughter. Very funny and very clever. Denise Smallwood says, I recommend this podcast. Not only is it fun, I've learned so much about the Archers as a relative newcomer in the US. I started listening to the Archers during the end of Helen's trial. DumDeeDum explained so much and brought me up to speed. I'm still learning characters and really enjoy the host's insights and opinions. Thank you, Denise. I usually think that everyone's been listening for a long time, but of course we do have newcomers, and that is a wonderful way to use the podcast. Angela Nagel said, loved this pod from the first listen. Lucy and Royfield are so funny together, and as it's aged, it's been embellished with many other voices and stories from listeners. Royfield, there you are, you got a name check. Gil or Jill Jennison says, I love listening to the podcast. It really enhances my enjoyment of The Archers by exploring and discussing so many aspects of the show. And Helen Davies says, if you enjoy The Archers and have a sense of humour, give this wonderful podcast a go. It adds a whole new level to your weekly listening. Jan Mitchell says, I love the humour and honesty, and it's nice to know I'm part of a caring community. Thank you, Jan. That's truly not just virtual. Royfield, Lucy and Robert and occasional guest presenters all add their own unique voices to the mix. Bernadette McGuire says, I've been listening right from the beginning of this great podcast. It's interesting, clever, therapeutic, informative and not just about the Archers. I think that might be a reference to Map Corner. And fun. And you meet some lovely people, even if you don't actually meet them. Highly recommended. And finally, from Martin. Oh, no, sorry, I have got two. I do beg your pardon. Martin McEverly says, light-hearted, well-observed, funny, and sometimes downright rude. Great job, guys. Thanks. And to finish us off, Sean Coleman says, I have recommended a podcast. I love it so much. Thank you so much, everyone. I will do an occasional review, sort of repeat of people who have reviewed us. But we really, really appreciate you taking the effort. We know it's a, you know, that it's easy to ignore that, and you've done that. And we get 5 out of 5 from all of our reviewers. So that's really lovely too. So hope you're having a great week, everybody. And I hope this puts more pepper in your pipes, both Lucy and Royfield, and that you will continue being awesome. I won't be speaking to you again until after Christmas. So from me to you, Merry Christmas. Have a safe one. And hooroo.
Right then, Luce. That seems to be just about a wrap. Anything you'd like to say before I run off round to Joan Michaels to have a bit of scran?
No. I was trying to find my headline of the day and I've lost it. I think it... Oh, no, there it is.
Naked woman hits burglar in face with flip-flop.
I have to stop reading terrible newspapers, I really do, but they're the funniest thing.
You know, my dad.
Oh my god, no, it's funny what how part the... of this story has just reminded you of your dad? Anyway, carry on.
Well, it's just one of these kind of bus driver stories, which I always remember from when I was a little kid. My dad used to drive the 104, or no, it was the 102 bus, which used to go from Birmingham City Centre, and he used to go to Sutton, then loop round to Erdington. And he always used to remark on the lady at the terminus, if you drove the first bus, so, it's, you know, and he got to the terminus at like 6 o'clock or 5:30 in the morning, I always used to remark on the lady at number 37, who used to keep her lights on, have her curtains open, and just get changed in the nude.
Right.
And yeah, and it was something which was always remarked upon on the by the bus drivers sure. of the number 102 bus. Yeah, they always used to say you just go upstairs, sit on the back of the bus, read your newspaper, and just glance over at the woman number 37, who absolutely knew what she was Blimey. Doing and whatever. And she's obviously a bit of an exhibitionist. Yeah. So
crikey.
So if you were that woman on the number 37, please do and let us know. What was going through your mind, Mrs. for all those years? But anyway, I think that's me. I'm just about done, Arloose. Okay. We've gone through all the things that we needed. We've thanked people. Please email me.
We have done those things we ought to have done, and we have left undone those things.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And don't forget the whole BBC tour thing, because it's just for us dummy-dummers, and it's very nice of the Beeb to offer our listeners that. So that's me signing out, and just to say, let's have a wonderful 2019 as dummy-dummers all together.
Yay.